Hello, and welcome back to an exciting edition of Hayden's Entertainment Hour. Today, I have an old friend, and he was a guest originally on the podcast when we talked about the devil all the time. His name is Mr. Nozawa, or Noz as he likes to be called. Noz, buddy, it has been good to see you again. I have missed our chats. Do you want to just give everybody an update on how is the life of Noz been, what you've been watching, what you've been up to? You told me some crazy stories about how you lost your job. I mean, just, do you want to give us a quick update on the life of Noz, the biopic coming out soon?
This way, right? There are two pandemics currently affecting America right now. COVID-19 and crazy-ass white women. One is a disease that somehow spreads all around the world, infects the minds of people, infects people everywhere, makes people lose their jobs for months on end, and you virtually can't go anywhere without finding one. And the other is called COVID-19. But it's a terrible joke. Anyway, my life has been all right so far. I tried going to the beach today with a friend. She really wanted to go, and I took her. I tried to take her, but unfortunately, I forget that I live in Florida and the weather is sporadic, so
yeah.
That didn't go well. And I also have to deal with a lot of crazy people not wanting to wear their mask everywhere. And but frankly, I've just been watching a lot of television. Better Call Saul, the sixth season, currently it's best. And it's right up there with season 5 of Breaking Bad, probably even better than that, personally.
Yeah, it's a great show. It's actually one of those I'd recommend people watch than the Disney Plus shit. Right now, like, why are we not giving Better Call Saul more love? It needs more love.
The weirdest part is that even people who hate like the Marvel Disney shtick seem to have a weird hate boner for Better Call Saul.
Get how?
I don't know. The consensus is that it's too slow, and I'm like, okay.
Would you want the show about the lawyer to be fast-paced like Breaking Bad? Exactly.
They wanted it to be what it was originally going to be, the 30-minute, half-hour comedy, which could have been good if they did it that way, but it's like, you know, they have their format, and why not continue it?
Exactly. That's how I felt. I was happy that they were going to keep it pretty much the same format as Breaking Bad, as like this little slow burn.
Definitely. Do you remember that day where Bob Odenkirk had his heart attack?
Yes, that was, they were going to shut down the rest of the season if he couldn't obviously come back to acting from it.
So, like, Better Call Saul, and in an alternate universe, Better Call Saul ended in a cliffhanger.
Basically, it ends, he had the heart attack on the episode where he comes back into the apartment and is screaming at Kim because she's leaving him. So, like, honestly, that would have been a great final episode to end on, because a lot of people say that episode from last week should have been it, where he becomes Saul Goodman. I can see that, but I also want to see how Gene's story ends, because, like, you know, the whole thing that Breaking Bad fans want to know is Gene going to meet up with Jimmy or something like that? And I'm sure in some way he'll get his moderately happy ending. It felt like this week's episode was a moderately happy ending for Gene, but as we know, we can't have nice things, and Vince and Peter tend to give us unexpected endings. So
they sure do. And frankly, I think those two guys that he helped rob the mall with, I think one of them's gonna die.
For sure. For sure, that is a good theory to have.
Especially considering like the promo for the next episode is like Saul repeating the line, "One day you're just gonna forget about it."
Yeah. Oh, shoot. I forgot we were going to talk about a movie today. We got into talking about Better Call Saul.
Better Call Saul's damn good.
yeah, it is. But yeah, today we were talking about Nope, the latest Jordan Peele movie. Jordan Peele, great filmmaker, great guy. Grew up watching Key and Peele with him in it. He's a talented voice actor. He's just an all-around talent. He's a really creative guy, and I think that's why, you know, I enjoy most of his movies that have come out. I enjoy Get Out. I think that's a really good movie. It has some great political themes, and it really mirrors modern day in a lot of ways. Us, I thought, was okay. I thought that movie had a problem with the third act feeling like it was just kind of a mess, and some of the themes don't really get expanded upon like Jordan Peele probably intended. But this movie is a damn good spectacle. It felt like I was watching a fucking Spielberg movie, like old Spielberg, not the modern Spielberg where he's just letting the VFX teams make the movie and he gets to sit there and be like, oh, I remember in my day I was making films like Indiana Jones and Jaws. And that was... That was what the revolutionary technology was at the time.
Well, hold up a minute. I've seen clips of the new West Side Story. That looks all right.
Yeah, I will admit, it probably is unfair to say that. But yeah, I did not see West Side Story. I never really was a big fan of the original one, so I didn't care for the remake. But he's still very good at directing like that 50s, 60s era of Hollywood. Like, the one thing I'll give Indiana Jones 4 credit for in that movie I do not like... he's very good at making it feel like it lives and exists within that time period. He's a very good period piece director also.
I will say that you are right. That what you said is right in regards to a movie like Ready Player One. Mm-hmm. You know, a movie made for like the type of guys that would like, who would invite you to watch Monty Python, but they would always recite the joke right before it happens in like a really theatrical voice, yeah. You know, just to get your attention. That's what that movie's made for. That's what that movie's made for right there. Just a boring, dreadful film.
No, I completely understand that. But Nope is the latest project. Like I said, this is a spectacle movie. Feels a lot like Jaws in a lot of ways. It stars Daniel Kaluuya, Kiki Palmer, Michael Wincott. I mean, there's just a lot of great names and talents attached to this. The movie has a lot of great social commentary that we'll get into. Initially, though, Naz, I am curious, what are your thoughts on Jordan Peele's first two movies, this movie, and then we'll get into breaking down this movie a little bit.
I wanted to go in hating Get Out because a lot of people claim that I look like Daniel Kaluuya. As a matter of fact, we have the same first name, so that kind of made it worse. I am like two shades lighter than that motherfucker, all right? Plus, I'm taller, too. And handsome, so... I don't know. But, I liked Get Out quite a bit. I very much so. I very much so like Get Out. I like the fact that it wasn't... I mean, a lot of people I knew went in assuming that it was the I Hate White People movie, but it's not that at all. It's just like this... really scathing critique about the type of people that like the type of white guys that invite you to their D&D party because they quote unquote want more diversity, something that's happened to me personally. Not gonna lie, I thought it was a tight script. It was like, you know, competently directed, and I was proud because, you know, Jordan Peele, he was always just the funny man to me. You know, Keanu, I thought it was going to be that type of movie. I went in thinking it was a comedy, but I went out watching something that was closer in mind to The Twilight Zone, which he ended up posting. What did you think of Us?
So, like I initially said, I enjoy Us for kind of the slasher vibes that it gives off. I think Us works as like a really good slasher horror movie in a lot of ways. But like I said, I don't know. The movie felt like it was juggling a lot of themes, and the third act came around, and it felt like it was trying to be as big as Get Out's finale. And I was just kind of sitting there going like, okay, like this is fine. But I was not the biggest fan of Us as a movie. I think it was okay. I think one thing that I appreciate about this movie versus a movie like Us is that, one, this movie is a spectacle, because I've always wanted Jordan Peele to make a spectacle, or at least a movie that has high stakes and modern audiences can like attach themselves to. But two, it's also a really, really deep piece on consumerism, the way we treat nature, about grief. I think grief is one of the biggest themes of this movie, which I'll get into a little bit later. And just overall, like, I feel like this one does a lot better balancing like big heavy themes and a spectacle versus where Us kind of felt like it was doing the opposite.
Us definitely felt like a script that he had been writing in the past that couldn't have been made unless he got the success that he got from Get Out. But it felt like he just rushed into production on that, you know, because he was still on that high of, yeah, I'm the genius who made like a brilliant movie. You know what I mean?
Oh, no, yeah, I totally get that. And some people have made that argument. There are a lot of people that are like, oh, you're just nitpicking with Us. It's actually just as good as Get Out. I don't know if I agree with that camp.
The script because, is not good.
Yeah, the script's not that great, but I still think it's a fine, okay movie that I'd revisit maybe once every few years. But with this one, I was damn impressed, not only with the story, but with the characters and everything they did. One thing I have to say about Daniel Kaluuya in this is, like, versus other roles that he's in, he plays a quiet and reserved character, and a lot of it has to do with the grief that he's going through. But one thing that I really enjoy about Daniel Kaluuya in this movie is he doesn't have to completely show his acting range. We're getting a side of his acting range that we've never seen before, which is him playing like a cool, calm, collected character. Because, fun fact, in this movie, you never really hear him raise his voice, or like in Get Out, where he was playing like a character that was in a situation where he was freaked out and fearing for his life. A role like this, where he plays like a simple farm boy that's quiet, reserved, keeps to himself, is constantly thinking about how do we catch this creature. And I kind of love that. It's a different dynamic versus what we got in Get Out, and different from when he played Fred Hampton in Judas and the Black Messiah, which is like arguably his greatest performance ever.
Yes.
But I ideally love everything about this character, because people were complaining he doesn't have much to do. But to me, that's the point, is that Daniel Kaluuya is not meant to be the star of this movie. It's actually Kiki Palmer, who I do not care for much as an actress. I won't lie, I have not liked her in a lot of things I've seen. I thought she was just kind of like that Nickelodeon star that got cast into things because she was an actress that people grew up liking. But I will admit, what's that?
You're not a fan of Michaela and the Bee, the greatest spelling bee movie ever made?
She was in Hustlers, that Jennifer Lopez movie a few years back, and I thought she was fine in that. But in this, I was damn impressed, because it really does showcase her acting range, and that if you give her the right source material and script, she can be a damn good actress, because it kind of changed my perspective on her after seeing this movie. I do think she is talented, but I think a lot of it, kind of like Adam Sandler, depends on the script and the director.
Oh man, I'm a racist. It's actually pronounced Akilah and the Bee. God damn it. And I'm black.
Oh no.
Anyway, I think I also agree with you. Especially compared to Us. Oh, let me back up a bit. I'm peeking here. Especially compared to Us, I thought that this was 10 times, probably even greater than Get Out personally. And I mean, this movie had everything. It had a solid script that built itself from the ground up. I mean, arguably the first half is slow, but you know, so is the first half of Jaws, and it just gradually builds itself up until it ends, you know, in this denouement that's, you know, that takes you by your seat, and it leaves you by the edge of your seat. And personally, I think that this is Jordan Peele's best work so far. I know that there's a lot of complaints that the themes were a bit muddy, but I'm like, not really. I mean, the theme is muddy. It's like, it's about the 08 crash and racism, I think. You know what I mean? There wasn't much to do with Us. But here, you have the theme of history sweeping things under a rug, the exploitation of essentially Hollywood against the downtrodden, be it animals, minorities, and you know, basically how society as a whole craves spectacle. I mean, Daniel Kaluuya's character's name in this is literally OJ, and we all know about that, don't we?
Yeah, because one of the only few white characters in the movie at the beginning makes a little comment. She's like, "Your name is OJ?" And he goes, yeah, and so does Judah. And she goes, "Oh." And she like slowly backs away from him. I'm like, oh, Peele's just really good at like sprinkling stuff like that into a movie.
You know, it would have been like a dumb like background joke, but somebody should have just pointed out, somebody should have pointed out to Daniel, hey man, you're missing your other glove. And Dan just gives him like this dirty ass look, like, oh, I haven't heard that one before, you know what I mean? But so yeah, I think whatever Pill is trying to say here, I think you made it pretty damn clear. I'm not sure what people are missing, but why don't we start with just like a general plot outline. Why don't you go ahead and do that for us?
Yeah, no problem. So a general plot outline of Nope is that O.J. Haywood and Kiki Palmer, who plays Emerald, are living on the Haywood Ranch. And one day, mysteriously, their father, played by Keith David, dies from objects that fell out of a prop plane, quote unquote. However, OJ is not convinced by this, and neither is Kiki Palmer. They are down bad for money because they will lose the ranch if they do not start booking gigs with their horses. And they've been selling a lot of their horses recently to Little Jupe, who's played by Steven Yeun, that is across the way, that secretly wants to buy their ranch for reasons we'll get into later. But it is all up to OJ Haywood, Kiki Palmer, and the rest of the cast to figure out what this creature is in the sky that ended up killing their father, get proof of it, and ultimately become rich, save the farm, be horse trainers that go on forever, getting the Oprah shot. One thing that I have to say about this movie is that a plot like this will instantly make you think of Jaws, to where there is a mystery going around that people are dying left and right on this beach. There are characters that have been affected personally by the trauma that this creature is bringing. And so the ultimate goal is to get proof of this creature. And if you can't get proof of the creature, the next best thing is to kill it. Because, I won't lie, the third act of this movie reminds me a lot of Jaws. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, because obviously Peele has pointed out he wanted to make this feel like a Spielbergian movie. But a lot of this movie will give you like that feeling of Steven Spielberg's Jaws.
Oh, well, Kiki Palmer even kills the main creature at the end by using an air canister, much like Jaws. you know what I mean?
Yeah. Now, I want to get into, I guess, one theme that I think right out, because compared to most of the other themes in this movie, I don't have a lot of issues with them. But there's the one, obviously, about the downtrodden, like you were talking about, how we treat animals in society and stuff like that. One thing in particular that I kind of love about the movie is the fact that there is a scene with a character named Gordy, which we'll get into a little bit later. Oh, did you bug out?
No, something like that. No, keep going.
Okay, anyways, one thing that I like about this movie in particular is that, like you talked about with the downtrodden and everything like that, and the way this movie handles how we basically mistreated animals, use them for spectacle, stuff like that, is there's a character named Gordy that very clearly this chimp like lost it one day because a balloon went off and it just set off the animal instincts in it to like go into predator mode and defend itself. And this chimp murdered everybody on set. And ultimately its death also leads into a lot of the characterization of Steven Yeun. But like you understood, like this poor creature died as a result of like it was taken from its home, basically forced to be a spectacle, and then when it finally snapped back into an animal, the response is to kill it, which was like dark. Like that actually really messed me up, and it's kind of this is where my problem kind of in lies with the movie a little bit, is the creature, because spoiler alert, the UFO is not a UFO, it's actually a creature. The creature in the sky is also an animal itself. And Steven Yeun has been using it as a spectacle. And of course, Daniel Kaluuya and Kiki Palmer are trying to get proof of it. But instead of the response of like respecting it as a creature and letting it wander around its home or do whatever, because it's technically its jungle, if you want to say. Yeah, they blow it up. And that's kind of my issue, is by the ending, I'm just sitting there going, oh, okay, well, that theme feels a little bit like it was for nothing, because their response is to kill the creature rather than like lead it away from the area. So I don't know, that theme felt like it needed better baked in the oven, because it feels so tone deaf when they blow the creature
I mean, just like what is the lesson you learn? Because I like leaving the theater, I'm like, wait, then if the lesson is don't do this thing, then why do the main characters win at the end? Because it's like, and you automatically lose whatever weight you had in that theme by like allowing them to kill that creature that wasn't doing anything. Well, I mean, it was doing something, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I get what you mean. But that's kind of one of the things about the movie that I had issue with. Like, there are other good themes in this. Like I was talking about earlier, grief is one of the most prominent, because when Keith David dies at the beginning of the movie, Daniel Kaluuya's character is quiet, doesn't say a whole lot about it, and then as it slowly unravels into the plot of trying to discover this creature, their way of processing their grief is that they need photographic evidence that this creature exists, that what killed this their pops from the sky is a real thing, and they just need to tangibly see it and spread the word about it, so that way they know, like, their pops' death wasn't this fabricated cover-up of, like, oh, it was just a prop plane. And I think that's really interesting, because it does drive a lot of, like, media consumption themes in this movie forward, because they're, like I said, the Gordy's Home incident is a spectacle that people are obsessed with, because this is gross, but a lot of our modern day society is obsessed with tragedies like that. They like spectacles like that. They like to merchandise and obviously make profit off of it. And that's one of the things that I found interesting, is it felt like for a while the grief that they were processing was going to turn straight into a spectacle and exploitation of their father's death by this creature. And I think that's one of the most underlying, like, great things about the movie that had me just go, wow, Peele is really good at taking themes like this and making them deep.
Our society is probably what get our society is consuming more information than ever before. Everywhere we go, terrible things are caught on camera, and we're forced to watch. We're not forced to watch, but we can't help ourselves but watch it. You know, I mean, we all go on live leaks. I mean, I don't personally, but we all go on live leaks and watch terrible shit happen all the time. And the media always needs to find another scapegoat or a controversy to just run off of, because that's what people go off of. I mean, like, as of recently, the Johnny Depp trial, right?
Yeah.
We're watching two grown-ass people try to fight against each other to claim who did who or who did what. And millions of people I, like, personally respect, like, got into that to give their side. And it's like, you know, the verdict was already decided, depending on how they wanted to read the story. And you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And despite learning from that event, people were just going to do it again. Mm-hmm. And probably make the situation worse, much like Steven Yeun's character.
Yeah. And I think it's just kind of like Steven Yeun's character, you understand the traumatization he had from the Gordy's Home incident at the beginning with the chimp murdering everyone. What I kind of love about it is they set up a framing device where this shoe with, like, a little blood dot on it is standing up, like, just perfectly up.
Yeah.
And he's so focused on it while Gordy is trying to give him a fist bump that his initial reaction after Gordy is shot is to not be, like, terrified. He smiles. He thinks the whole reason that Gordy was, like, coming to him for a fist bump or calm down is because he is special. He is chosen. And so a lot of the catalyst for this movie is that once Steven Yeun's character comes across the alien creature, discovers it's eating horses in the valley, he thinks he's special enough to be able to tame a creature like the Predator in the sky, the UFO creature. And so for the past 6 months at his Jupiter's Claim theme park that he's basically built off of his 90s success as a child actor, he has been putting on a spectacle every Friday at 5:30, feeding the creature horses, trying to enter, if what you will, like, an agreement with it. But instead of the creature obviously, like, obligating to this agreement, eventually it does what every predator does. It just asserts its dominance. It knows it's its territory. And it's what ultimately leads to Steven Yeun, his family, and all of the people that showed up for the attraction being consumed whole by the creature, slowly digested and killed. And that's one thing I kind of love about Steven Yeun's character and the way Peele wrote him, is, like, there are so many people that feel like they're special. They can control natural disasters like this, or disasters waiting to happen, and then they can't. And it leads to the death of thousands of people, if not, you know, just a couple hundred. And this movie does a really good job pointing that out, that Steven Yeun was never in control of a creature, because you can't tame a creature, much like Gordy couldn't be contained at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, we witness these events and we try to give more meaning to them than they actually are. I think, you know what the Gordy situation really reminded me of? And this might be stretching it, because I'm just thinking about Steven Yeun, his ethnicity and whatever. But what it really reminded me of was the Twilight Zone accident. Are you aware of that?
I have not heard of this. I have not.
The Twilight Zone movie accident. So, back in the 80s, they made a adaptation of The Twilight Zone into a movie where several directors, John Landis, Steven Spielberg, and a bunch of other guys, went together and directed several segments of anthologies to put into one movie. I think Dan Aykroyd even gets eaten at the beginning of it. But, so John Landis, the son of, the father of Max Landis, I bet you've heard of him. Right?
Oh yeah, I've heard of Max Landis, yeah.
But, so John Landis, the father of Max Landis, made one segment that starred Vic Morrow as some sort of a Vietnam veteran or whatever. And the segment, during this, he hired two Vietnamese children to be in it. And I believe what had happened is they were filming a segment that required them to film in a helicopter. But not only were these children out late at night in this dark forest, when they were way past like the time that they should be there, because you know they're child labor laws in Hollywood, children are not supposed to be there at a certain time, and their parents weren't even there. And what had happened was there was an accident because John Landis had ordered the helicopter during the sequence to fly so low that it ended up malfunctioning. And both Vic Morrow and the Vietnamese children died during the crash. As a matter of fact, I believe the footage of Vic Morrow's head being decapitated by the helicopter plane is currently on YouTube, which is, I've never seen it, but it's pretty terrible. Wow. Yeah. John Landis basically, his son claims it was an accident, but you really read into it and it's like, he basically used his power and influence to get away with this and exploited the situation to basically, you know, get off scot-free. And so I'm wondering if Peele, and obviously he took inspiration for the Oprah chimpanzee incident. There's that too, where Oprah made that woman who was attacked by the chimpanzee reveal her face live on television, which was in poor taste. Much like how it's in poor taste for Steven Yeun to think that he has the power to control his creature, despite the fact that he saw what happens when you
do that sort of thing. Another interesting thing, which I think the other child actress that was on the fake TV show with Steven Yeun, right?
Yeah.
She's brought back later in the movie and her face is all like tore up, like her teeth are sticking out visibly and she's like covering it up. That also might be a reference to the Oprah incident where like the woman revealed her face live on TV. I think that also might be a reference to it because she's trying to conceal it. And it's not until the creature actually shows up and starts abducting him that it blows like her little face covering off and it's revealed like it's decrepit, tore up, obviously, from where the chimp just started going at her face. And like little stuff like that is stuff that you just think about a little bit that like he put in there is like, why is this in here? And I kind of love that. But one thing in particular I want to talk about, and this might be a little weird, is Lucky the horse. Now, do you notice that all the other horses in the movie tend to get eaten, disappear, or die off screen, basically, but Lucky's the only one that sticks around? They say, he is Lucky, much like the name, but the one thing that I kind of like about Lucky that I think is a parallel with OJ in the movie is that the two of them are very stubborn. Like, Keith David at the beginning kind of points out that OJ's a little bit stubborn. Kiki Palmer points out how her brother is really stubborn. Like, she won't sell the farm to Steven Yeun and they can make so much money. But it kind of works that the two of them are so stubborn because we see that their stubbornness and determination to, like, prove the inevitable or, like, what we can't see out there is what drives the movie forward and ultimately leads into the ending where the creature reveals itself, they're able to trap it, and Kiki Palmer is able to stick the hydrogen tank in its mouth and blow it up, basically.
The old West cowboy, basically.
Yeah, and that's what I also liked about him, is he kind of did give us that like old West cowboy feel, like kind of like, I wish Keith David was in it a little bit more, obviously, to like show the parallels of what he gave OJ, but obviously Keith David was probably like, I'm only doing a cameo, I'm 69 years old, damn it.
It's the old passing on the knowledge to the new. you know?
Mm-hmm. I wish there were some more scenes like that, but I understand they had to get the plot moving forward.
You can't have enough of Keith David, but he fit the role that he was meant for. I don't even think he was advertised at all, personally.
No, I think his, like, death was kept ambiguous and everything like that, mostly because they, like, advertise him after he dies, which I find hilarious. They're like, and Keith David. I'm like, oh, is he in the movie more? And he has, like, one scene after where he talks about how one of the horses is territorial, and that's it.
And, to be honest with you, what I also liked is how, like, Daniel Kaluuya's character managed to, like, I love how we're only talking about him despite the fact that people claim that he had nothing to do, but it's like, no, I like what he did there, but I also like the fact that he used his knowledge of animals and mainly horses to almost, like, trick the creature itself.
Yeah, because because he's the one that discovers the quickest, like, the creature only takes you if you look at it, because it's much like the horse at the beginning being spooked by its own reflection, which costs him the gig. Mm-hmm. And that's ultimately what I like about it, is that parallels when Daniel Kaluuya's like, don't look at it and it won't take you. And so he uses that to his advantage, to where he's putting, like, reflectors on the back of his hoodie, or he's putting, like, reflectors on things, or using the little, I don't even know how you describe them, the inflatable wacky arm flailing tube man, basically, to, like, throw off the trail of the creature. Like, all of his skills is a... Yeah, he uses all of his skills, learning from his father about horse wrangling, to his advantage. And that's what really kind of tied the whole movie together for me, is, like, the passing of the torch and everything like that. But I also like Kiki Palmer, because she's, like, the complete opposite of OJ and her dad. She's very free-spirited, does her own thing. Feels like she's grown more into a city girl than she is a farm girl at that point. And the way that she conducts business, stuff like that, she's more open, more bubbly and everything like that, is she's obviously coping in a different way from OJ, but at the same time, she's more high-spirited. She's trying to look at things more positive, which is, like, a great dynamic to have, because in a lot of movies, most siblings are written to be, like, the most cliche, I love you, brother kind of thing. But the two of them, so different in tone and character, is kind of what made them stand out to me, because they butt heads a lot in the movie, realistically, like siblings. But they both do understand, like, their methods, their strengths, what they're good at, is ultimately what keeps them together.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things about her that, like, he just can't get behind, you know? I mean, he's obviously not somebody who puts himself on social media as much as she does, and... I mean, she's a lesbian, and he's just, you know, old straight man. And, but, you know, instead of, like, I guess what they learn is that instead of pushing each other away, they should find a common ground with one another in order to succeed. You know, and I think part of it is that, like, despite their differences, they're still similar people. They're both black people whose ancestor was sort of brushed aside, because that's what the powerful do to the downtrodden. Tragedies are brushed aside, and the only time that people notice is when, you know, something awful happens, or when they can exploit, or when they can, like, use the downtrodden to be, or when they can exploit the downtrodden for profit. That's the only time where that type of spectacle and tragedy is remembered.
Yeah, and that's also a really good thing to point out about the movie, too. Now, I want to talk about this Antlers Holt character, the Spielberg character, who's the cinematographer that is obsessed with getting the right shot in the movie.
He's a fine
Michael Wincott was, like, a 90s, 80s movie character bad guy, and it was kind of nice to see him in something like this, where he plays, like, a more neutral character, because, one, he's only there because he wants undeniable proof that this creature exists. He could not care about the intentions of anybody else in the movie. But two, he's written in such, like, a goofily, cliche-y way, like Spielberg would have a character, to where I kind of love his inclusion in this. And a lot of people have said his death is really dumb, but that's the icing on the cake for me, because it kind of feels like how the captain dies in Jaws, where he just comically gets his hand crushed by a canister and slides into Jaws' mouth and gets eaten.
I was about, I'll wait before I go into it, but I want to point out, like, that moment where he says it's almost daylight, and like half the people in the theater were going, what? But like, as a cinematographer personally, I'm like, yeah, I know what he means. It's almost daylight hour. He wants that fucking magic shot, man. That Roger Deakins shit. Go off, King. Go out. But during that scene where he's doing the old rhyme or the song, maybe, purple flying. How's it go? Purple horn people eater.
It's fly, one eyed, one horn flying purple people eater.
Right, which I thought I try at the first. I thought that was what note meant, but the words didn't go together. But that scene, that moment is basically the Indianapolis speech from Jaws, isn't it? That's what that is.
Yeah.
It's like everybody's looking at him weirdly, but what he's talking about, he's just making an analogy to the monster, but in a way that seems a bit more vague compared to the how straightforward the Neapolis scene is in Jaws.
Yeah, and that's one of the touches that I kind of liked about his character a little bit. Also, I should point out that one thing I enjoyed about him is that, one, he makes the non-electrical crank camera, but he shoots it on IMAX, kind of like old-school IMAX, where you had to just basically run until your film reel stopped. And they do point that out, how like crews have to do that. They have to switch out tapes for IMAX because you have to reload the film reel. And like, that was really good too, because there is a point where like the creature's coming down and they have to switch the IMAX film reel as quick as they can. And if you're just like a crew fan, like if you've ever worked on like a crew set or like you've worked on a movie crew before, you will appreciate this movie because it shows how hard it is to get the right shots and get the right cinematographer and get the right film reel and everything like that, because they go to so many filmmaking lengths to catch this creature to where you are going to fall in love with how they do. And like you said, like the death of Michael Wincott kind of makes more sense because he is a cinematographer. He knows what lighting will do, what the money shot will look like. Sure, it's cliche that, you know, he's going to just ultimately get eaten by the creature, but like, that's the icing on the cake. Is he so cliche, it works.
In a way, you could almost argue that this movie is about the filmmaking process.
Yeah, because they have a great reference to a movie that is beloved by everybody. Daniel Kaluuya wears an orange sweatshirt from him and his father's first gig, which was on Dwayne The Rock Johnson's Scorpion King.
Badass movie, by the way. You know, not gonna lie. Great whenever it came on FX.
Yeah. But I just love that. That is a great little like crew reference to have. It shows how hard film crews work and stuff like that. Now, do you want me to get into my controversial take with the movie? A character that I do not love that's in this movie?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. I hate Angel. I don't like this character. He just, Brandon, I don't know if there was, what's that?
Brandon Pereira?
Yeah, I don't know. This character kind of felt like what you'd see in a Marvel movie. Like, he's the comedic relief, and a lot of his jokes are kind of like recycled Marvel jokes. Like, he has this one joke when he first gets there where he's like, oh, I just got out of a rough relationship. Yeah, her name was Rebecca Diaz. She's a model and everything. She left me for the CBU. Oh, you guys are out here looking for an alien? You know, they're not called aliens anymore. They're actually called UAPs. Did you know they're just waiting to stick metal probes up her ass? Did you guys know? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, this movie is just written one of the worst characters ever. It's terrible.
Throughout this whole, I liked him. I found him funny, but then I just keep imagining a worse version of this movie where he's played by TJ Miller, and that makes me despise him more. So and I don't know. I understand what Peele was doing there, because you have so many personalities working in this movie, right? You have Daniel Kaluuya as the stoic everyman that we watched the movie from. Kiki Palmer is the eccentric female lead. Stephen Yeun's the mayor from Jaws. He's even kind of dressed like him. Michael Wincott's the dumbass who dies by the dumbass eccentric who dies by making some stupid mistake. And of course, you need the fast talking nerd who explains everything to the main characters. It almost has like the same setup of a heist film, basically. But I guess the thing is that we're living this. As time goes on, guys like Angel are just really annoying, and they sometimes grow up to be white supremacists. So there's also that. So I can see where you're coming from.
Yeah, I also was in the minority, I think, on this, where I said, like, his character after a certain point just felt kind of useless, because when Michael Wincott shows up with his, like, non-electric camera, I was like, oh, well, that kind of voids Angel altogether. And ultimately, like, Michael Wincott becomes useless, too, at a point, but it's also because of, like, his fault. Like we said, him trying to get the perfect shot, like, all their film reels destroyed and everything like that, but... I don't know, like, after the first scene with Angel setting up the cameras and the cameras obviously not working well to their advantage, I was like, okay, this character's gonna disappear now, Michael Wincott's gonna come in, save the day. But instead he kind of just hangs around, is an assistant to Michael Wincott, he gets almost eaten by the creature, and then is thrown in a tarp off screen, and then does nothing after that. Like, he's just kind of pointless. I was like, why did we need this character?
He's cute. He's the guy who tells you how to the attitude.
I know he's cute, and that's the problem.
Well, it builds. It also goes back to what we said earlier, where this movie needed a darker ending, because Angel survives, Kiki Palmer survives, and like supposedly even OJ survives, and everybody gets what they want at the end. But like a character like Angel has to die. Like, because he's part of the obsession of the spectacle, you know. I mean, like, he goes past boundaries just in order to prove that, you know, aliens exist. I mean, he spies on these people. Like Kiki Palmer even points that out, that, you know, what you did was really illegal and we could sue you for it. But like, of course they brush it aside, because what matters is getting that perfect shot of something that just wants to be left alone.
Yeah, I completely understand it. I don't know, it's kind of like, I enjoy Brian Tyree Henry in Get Out, but there is like the whole sequence where he goes to the cop station and is just riffing about the story about how he got taken. And it's like, okay, this is going on a bit long. Let's get back to the meat and potatoes of this movie. And then he shows up at the ending and has a funny one-liner. And I was like, he's fine. Like, I would take Brian Tyree's character in Get Out over Angel, because like the comedy there is better. Whereas with Angel in this movie, the jokes they gave him, I was like, my goodness, I'm expecting Iron Man to show up and just start quipping about shawarma with Angel here in a second. And I also find it ironic, Angel's actor in an interview said he wants to be in the MCU, and I was like, you know what? After seeing his character in this movie, he would fit it so well.
So well. He would either play... I know he wants to play Nova. But
Yeah, I saw that too.
Honestly, if that kid from Cobra Kai wasn't doing it, I would see him as like Blue Beetle in a DC movie. If they wanted to go that route.
Seriously, I would take that. That would be really interesting. But we'll have to wait and see, obviously, because Marvel is very good at... usually not trying to do people that ask to be in a role, but we'll see, because I think John Krasinski as Mr. Fantastic is looking like it's going to be closer and closer.
He was fucking awful.
Yeah, exactly. That's the problem. He was stiff, but Marvel's like, oh no, fans loved him as this character, and that's kind of my issue, is I really don't want Marvel to succumb to fan casts or people being like, oh, I wanna play Ghost Rider in the MCU. It's like, no, just pick it based on who would be best for that role.
I mean, John Krasinski is literally just white guy who, like, talks. He's just dude bro guy man. And
he's quirky because of The Office. Oh my goodness.
And I just don't get it. Yeah. You should cast fucking Larry David.
Honestly, I'd take Larry David as Galactus.
Oh god,
that'd be kind of funny. Just going around being like, "This planet is a little off."
I just, you know, this is really damaging my cholesterol. I can't deal with it. I won't deal with it. No.
Oh my goodness! But yeah, I guess. while we're having this little Marvel ramble, one thing I want to point out that is hilarious to me is Daniel Kaluuya turned down Black Panther 2 for Nope. That is hilarious to me because finally an actor said, I'm not going to do your shitty MCU movie. I want to go make something original. Yeah. Because there are a lot of people that are like, oh, I'm not seeing Black Panther 2 now because Daniel Kaluuya is not in it. And I just think that's hilarious that a big name actor like Daniel Kaluuya had the balls to tell Marvel, I'm not coming back because I'd rather do original content.
Well, yeah, I don't want to be in green screen land forever either, but that's like, I forget that he's in that movie, Black Panther. I do not remember his character's name at all. Sometimes they think John Boyega's in that movie. I'm like, oh, wait, no, he's fucking done with Disney. He ain't coming back.
Yeah, even like John Boyega went down the same route of like, I'm not coming back for Disney Plus shit. I'm going to go try to make real movies. And I guess there is a movie coming out where John Boyega is trying to do something serious, I heard about, which good on him. But this is a funny trend now. Actors are turning down like the MCU and stuff, which is kind of funny.
Every day, Martin Scorsese just is slowly proven right each day. Especially with all this news.
Every day he's like, and you called The Irishman a vanity project.
That made me so sad when I heard that. Vanity project from like one of the greatest directors in the world. All because it's not about like dudes in CGI shoots beating each other. And I like Marvel movies. Like, I'm still going. I've seen every I haven't seen Eternals. You could not pay me to watch Eternals. I do not want to see that movie. But I think I've seen all of Phase 4 besides Eternals. I really like Moon Knight personally, but like, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like my relationship with Marvel is that I'm in prison and like going to those movies feels like my parole hearing. You know, 14 years and I'm still doing time, man. Fucking sucks. Ugh. But we haven't talked about the creature yet, have we?
No, we have not talked about the UFO creature yet. This was such kind of like a creative little UFO alien creature because, for one, I guess when they get sucked up into the creature's stomach, it's a reference to an anime that I'm not familiar with. And there's also another one towards the ending, which if you know what the anime is, feel free to elaborate because I do not know what people are referring to.
Okay, well, I love you pointing this out because I actually made some YouTube videos about this a couple of years ago. So Akira, it's an anime that is about many things, mainly about psychic children, but Jordan Peele at one point was apparently a runner-up to direct the Akira movie, but I believe he turned it down because he felt that he wasn't ready yet. And yeah, that's a good way to go about it. You don't just make a $20 million movie and make a $30 million movie. And Akira was probably one of the most successful anime films of all time. Its animation is beyond gorgeous. And there are about two references in the movie. The first reference is a shot with Kiki Palmer on her motorcycle. It's known as the Kanada slide that nearly every animator, nearly every show likes to do, from like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles all the way to Adventure Time or like Kamen Rider. And it's a pretty popular shot. I think even Regular Show even did it at one point. But the other reference to Akira has to be the shot where the woman who was attacked by Gordy, who had her mouth all scarred up like that, is basically being ingested into the creature's body. Now, what I want to point out is just so clever is that Jordan Peele could have easily just made the creature's body like this gory, slimy, like, David Cronenberg-esque, like, you know, nightmarescape, right? But honestly, what it is probably something even more terrifying. Have you ever been inside a bounce house before?
Yeah, I've been inside a bounce house.
Everybody's been about. But have you ever had it rain and like some kid walks in the bounce house with his shoes still on and it ends up popping and nearly all the kids, including yourself, get trapped in it as it like crashes down on you?
been in, so yeah, I have been inside one that's like deflated, and all I remember is like you get this terrifying feeling of like I'm going to suffocate and die in here, basically, which I think is what you're alluding to, right? Is yeah, kind of what they're trapped like, in.
That's basically what it's like inside this fucking creature. And I think that's brilliant. It is somehow more terrifying than the idea of just being inside something's stomach. And it freaks you out.
And I think another brilliance too with the creature is the way that it digests people is like in one foul swoop it digests them, and then it basically spits out all of the items that were in the pockets of the people because it can't digest metal or it would cut it and destroy it. So instead it shoots down like the objects on just random places, I imagine, because like at the beginning of the movie it's just shooting out random keys and stuff and quarters and all that from people's pockets, but then it hovers over the house and it sends like all of the blood basically from all the people that died inside it onto the house and then shoots out all the keys. And then we see it can't digest things like prop horses or things that are metal or too big or like will not digest inside its plastic innards. So it rejects it. And ultimately, that's what leads to the catalyst at the ending of Kiki Palmer filling it with a bunch of helium and destroying it. But I kind of like how unique this creature is because it has its methods on how it digests things, what it can and can't eat. And it also is interesting because it does draw a fear of flags at one point in the movie, because when it tried to eat the prop horse, it had a flag ribbon dangling off of it, which is how they were able to track it and see where it was going. And when Daniel Kaluuya is leading the creature into the money shot, basically, he throws out a little flag umbrella thing that the creature ultimately tries to avoid. It tries to, like, Fast and Furious style, go away from it, and then it zooms back up into the air. And I found that just fascinating that the creature, this big predator, was afraid of a little flag.
It seems to just hate things that are filled with pocketed air, like itself, which is interesting. I also like the fact that it also had like its own defense mode where it sort of blows up into like what I can only describe as like a ripped up parachute, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and then it kind of casts out like its eye or whatever, because that's kind of what I love about it is how mysterious this thing is.
It almost seems like it wasn't trying to attack, but it was trying to scare something away, like certain animals do.
Well, I think too, one thing that I caught a parallel with a little bit is Daniel Kaluuya comes the closest to like taming it, quote unquote, because he's able to stand his ground with the creature at the ending. And I think the creature ultimately kind of saw Daniel Kaluuya as like another predator. And so, like Daniel Kaluuya talks about, you've got to try to enter like an agreement with one. I think the creature is subtly trying to enter an agreement with Daniel Kaluuya of like, I'll let you live on my territory if you don't mess with me. But then ultimately, Kiki Palmer runs away and attracts the creature because, you know, it's just a little human. It's already eaten a bunch of them. And so it's trying to catch up to her and kill her. But I think that's one of the reasons Daniel Kaluuya survives, is the creature somewhat respects it and enters a mutual agreement with it, because Daniel Kaluuya is able to outsmart this creature several times in the movie.
He broke the horse.
Yeah, he does break the horse of the movie, pretty much.
And instead of trying to, like, you know, be submissive about it, he takes control of the situation and becomes his own man, so to speak.
Yeah.
Whereas Kiki Palmer finally takes control of her own life and fights back, so to speak.
Basically, yeah. Well, a lot of people have said too that the ending is meant to be ambiguous. Like, there was one guy when I was walking out that was like, damn, it's sad that Daniel Kaluuya died. And there was somebody was like, but no, he's there in the fog at the ending. And somebody's like, no, dumbass, it's supposed to be like subliminal. And I was like, uh-oh, so this is where the divide begins. Is the whole ending like just this what's your interpretation kind of thing, or was Daniel Kaluuya alive? Which I kind of love, because Get Out kind of has a finality to it. Us kind of has like this little what the hell's going on ending. Like the ending of Us, I was like, oh, Okay, but I like this one because this one kind of has like a little bit of ambiguity towards the ending of like what the hell will happen, because they have the picture proof of the creature, the media is right behind them, Kiki Palmer is staring off into the distance at her brother, it's been building up to the two of them, you know, revealing this spectacle to the world, and ultimately will they or won't they? And I think that's kind of why I like this movie, is the ambiguity that it leaves.
Yeah. How, and it's like these people, one, let's let them have their victory. Whether they want or want, it's not our business. Let's look away.
Yeah.
That is, in a way, Peel has more respect for these people than most media people have respect for victims or people who have been through something traumatic like that.
How exactly.
Give these people their privacy. I will say this, though. Steven Yeun is probably my favorite character in the film, but he went out way too early.
He did. He does die a bit fast.
I honestly felt like his character should have lived just to be like, oh no, what have I done? I've learned the error of my ways. I thought that I was special, but I realize now that this is wrong and I didn't learn my lesson, because I mean, there are so many ways you could read the Gordy scene. Did Gordy attack him because of the fact that the cloth of the table that he was hiding under obscured his eyes? Because I've heard that theory.
Mm-hmm. Well, some people also thought that it was a trick, like Gordy wasn't completely out of his murder state, and he was just doing the fist bump as like a, can I lure the kid in and then drag him out by his arm and murder him? Some people also think it's like, and this one I don't agree with, is that Steven Yeun actually was special. Like, it wasn't all bullshit. Basically, they're like, no, he actually was special. Like, he did have something special about him, which is why he was a great acting talent, and he was able to capitalize off of his talent. But that also kind of just, like, ruins the whole fact that the creature proves that wrong at a certain point when he eats all of them. And that's kind of, I agree with you. Steven Yeun probably should have had an arc where it was like, oh my god, I've realized what I've done is terrible. But he's also supposed to kind of be like a villain somewhat also, because his ultimate goal is to buy the Haywood farm and be closer in contact with the creature and take over the rest of his land and expand the theme park. And ultimately, maybe there should have been a scene, and I think this is something that me and a friend talked about after we saw it. There should have been a scene where OJ ends up like selling him the rights to the farm because they're that down bad for money. He goes into the farm, tries to start construction, and then the creature, you know, eats all of them in there because that's its home turf. Like, it does not want anything else living there.
You know what? I keep thinking, man, that's such a brilliant character trope that needs to come back. The evil land developer that wants to turn the ranch into a parking garage. It's such an old school trope that I haven't seen in a long time, and I'm glad it's coming back. But
I know, and it just feels like Peele didn't want to go too far with that cliche, because it is a cliche. Be like, oh well, I'm leading into a cliche, and it's like, no, that's kind of the brilliance that I want.
I do feel like, because the Gordy storyline, I kept wait when I left the theater. I kept waiting for it to be like, okay, but what's the chimp got to do with this? I kept waiting for it to be like, oh, it's Gordy. He's evolved to some kind of cloud creature or something. I don't know. But I felt like Yoon's character was an idea that Peele really fell in love with, because that whole sequence with Gordy felt like a short film more than like an essential plot to the movie. But I felt like it was an idea that he fell in love with but didn't know how to incorporate. But he kept it in anyway because, well, it's the most memorable scene, arguably. Oh, probably more memorable than Jean Jacket, as they call it, the Nope. I just call it the Nope.
I think he's very good at creating little short pieces in his movies like that. Like Get Out, anytime he's in the sunken place, I love that. That is such a great framing device. I love everything about that. Even in Us, one of my favorite sequences in Us is when the tethered version of Lupita Nyong'o is, you know, recounting like how her life was switched and what she learned living with the other tethered and stuff like that, and it feels like kind of a little short film moment. And the Gordy scene feels like it would work so well in isolation as a short film. But I also think this is hilarious. Somebody pointed this out. There is a tweet from 2014 where Jordan Peele was like, I just had had like a dream where a monkey murdered a bunch of people and then it walked up to me scared and hugged me, and I find that hilarious that that was tweeted all the way back in 2014 and brought back now in this big blockbuster movie that Jordan Peele has crafted.
Oh, shit. Really?
Yeah. Somebody in one of our mutual servers, CVH, pointed that out, which I think is hilarious.
Man, well, Peele, you know what's one dream I want to put in one of my movies?
What's that?
I had a dream where I was at this pier, right? It was a bright and sunny pier. Everything was pretty normal until I walked into a diner, a pancake diner, and sitting at the table was this dude in black hair, with like slick black hair, and he was wearing a black suit. He turns around and looks at me, and it's Crispin Glover, and he looked exactly how he looked in that movie where he can control rats, Willard or whatever. He looks at me. He was chewing, like he had bits of pancake on his mouth, and he was just chewing it, and he was giving me like this really nasty look. He got up from like the stool he was sitting on. He got up to my face and he said, "You can't kill me, motherfucker." And then he turns me around and makes me look at the window to the diner, and like a giant cruise ship is heading straight towards me. It crashes into the diner, and then I just wake up in like a hot sweat.
I mean, that is one unique dream to have, though. That's pretty unique.
So now I hope that Crispin Glover is still acting by the time I'm old, so I can just relive that sequence.
Yeah. This is such like a great blockbuster movie that I wish more people were going out to see. It has made more than most of Peele's films on opening weekend. It's made like $40 million in its opening weekend, which is just damn impressive. I know to some people that'd be like, well, Marvel makes more money than that. Well, Marvel's a fucking machine ran by a mouse. Like, no shit, it's gonna make a shit ton of money. It's got a big corporation behind it. Universal kind of is trying to like redo its whole horror brand a little bit. That's why they've been going back into the Halloween IP, and they've been making deals with Blumhouse and letting Jordan Peele make his own movies and stuff, because like they want to bring back that Universal Monsters thing, which I kind of appreciate, but at the same time, those movies don't make as much money because they aren't like franchise hits.
I feel like The Invisible Man was their first step with that. I haven't even
it was a good step. Yeah.
I mean, you think they watched Red Letter Media's review of that, and review of like one of their Monsterverse or whatever? It's like, you know, these guys are smart. Why don't we just do what they do?
Exactly. Well, they're also taking like four steps back with that Rob Zombie's Monsters thing. It's like, what the hell is this?
You know what? I feel like that's just a little thing for Redbox, to be honest. I don't think that's anything that they wanted. And it felt like that Rob Zombie fucking edited that thing himself, to be honest with you.
Oh, he did. 110%. There's no way he didn't.
It just boggles the mind, because it's like, you know, I've seen The Devil's Reject. That's a pretty good looking movie, right? But like, it kind of makes me feel better at myself, about myself, that, you know, a director like Rob Zombie could make something that I could have made in like my community college. So that's all I gotta say about that. It makes me feel better at myself that even directors can make something that looks like that.
Yeah. But this is a great little blockbuster, and I would recommend everybody go out and see it. It definitely is not flawless, and it is going to remind you a lot of Jaws, and people are going to have their issues with it. Like I said, we both agreed one of the themes we think is just like very tone deaf towards the ending. I was not a fan of the Angel character. There's some moments in the movie that I felt like should have been expanded on more, written a little bit better, but it's still a good movie. I would recommend people go out and watch it. I think I gave it a 7 out of 10. I think I was like leaning towards an 8, but I'm still not there yet. It's definitely not a 6, so that's why I put it at a 7, just because, like, you know, it's fine to put it there. It's a good score for a good movie.
I gave it an 8.5 because it was clever, it was original in its own right, it had brilliant monster design, good thrills, and you know what? I left the theater feeling pretty damn good. And I've felt that way about original movies more so than I have Marvel movies this year. And if like the the box office success of like Top Gun 2 has anything to say. It's like people are kind of slowly getting back into normal movies again.
Yeah, we're seeing a resurgence. Yeah.
Oh, by the way, before we go, I want to point out, if they don't put at least one MF Doom song in a Doctor Doom movie, then Marvel's just fucking done. It's like, fuck you, people.
I was about to say, that'd be so tone deaf to not put an MF Doom song. I don't even care which one they pick. They could put Rap Snitch Knishes in there, and I would be happy.
Put Vaudeville Villain.
I know.
It's like an
That'd open. Be a good one. Yeah.
He's going to have a black son in America called Daniel Dumile.
Yeah, but yeah, this is fun. Thank you for coming back, Naz, because I was not sure if anybody else wanted to talk about Nope, and I was tired of talking about just Marvel content, so this was a good refresher to have. Now, all I have to look forward to coming up is a lot of filler streaming shit that's going to movie theaters. Probably that god-awful Halloween final movie that's coming out. There's going to be some indie films, I know, too. And then I think that Avatar movie's around the corner, and it's time to see if all the fucking 12 years of hype was worth it. Probably not, but we're still going to see it.
We're going to see it, just because I find the idea of making 79-year-old Sigourney Weaver play a teenager to just be like a balls-ass idea. Like, let's fucking go off, King.
what the fuck were you thinking?
It's like, they're just, I'm just imagining moments on set where poor Sigourney Weaver just had to adjust her back sometimes as she has to pretend to play like a 14-year-old.
I mean, yes, does it look visually great? It's like, yeah, duh, they've been working 12 years on these movies, and James Cameron is a fucking blockbuster great director, but like, God, imagine if it sucks. That's my whole thing, is like, imagine if this does not resonate with audiences like it did in 2009. What the fuck do you do if you're Disney?
And apparently he already shot all the sequels, so like, fuck, man, this guy, if this sucks, if this even, it's not even the fact that it might suck, what if it bombs? He will be in a financial burden for the rest of his life.
Well, here's the thing, he's already made his money. Disney's the one that's fucked. They don't know what they're gonna do.
Oh, fuck, right, this is a Fox picture.
Yeah.
Well, why aren't they marketing this? Doesn't this come out months from now?
Yeah, it comes out in December. They have one trailer out for it, and I'm sure more will come, but like, they only have one trailer for it right now.
They do not give a fuck about this, do they?
I don't know if they do. I mean, all they have is Black Panther 2 and that, and then that's pretty much it for Disney this year.
Like, but why not? The first one is the most successful movie ever made. It's like,
I know.
They'd be like on this. It's a train. Like, put Cole in the train and like storming down the fucking street, man. Like, come on. Mm. But good seeing you. Good damn movie, and I would love to come back and talk about anything you'd want to talk about.
Oh yeah, for sure. I enjoyed the hell out of this. This was good getting to talk to you again. Reach out if there are any movies you're interested in the future. Well, that's going to do it for this edition of Hayden's Entertainment Hour, guys. We'll see you next time with whatever crap comes out that you want to hear me review.
I don't.